fly ball right field deep. Canseco back to the track. Look it up. It is off his head, it looked like. And over the top. A home run. That looked like it hit Canseco over the top of the head. We'll have to check the replay.
It did.
It went over the fence. David Hulse laughing out there, so it must hit something funny. It either hit his head or his shoulder. Let's take a look at it. Martinez's fourth home run of the year. And Canseco goes back to the wall. He looks like he's, you know, he's checking the wall. He's checking the ball. Checking the wall and the ball. Reaches up. Hits him right there. He goes over the top.
It hit Canseco in the head and bounced over the wall for a homer. Look at this.
David Hulse was laughing when he went over there. Jose, you've hit a lot of home runs, you did a lot of great things, but that shot will live forever. That is, you will be remembered for that forever.
It's early on a Sunday morning, so you know what that means. Once again, Grinders, it is our time. This is the Sunday Morning Grind Podcast. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley, episode number 33. Greg, we made it. We arrived at the Jose Canseco episode.
And we're talking baseball today, so it's about as fitting as it gets.
And it's an interesting situation because we're talking about baseball, and there's a lot of contention going on. The lockout is officially a thing. So now we're talking about contention in baseball during the Jose Canseco episode. It's probably fitting that it works that way.
I'm going to double check and make sure he hasn't tweeted about it.
That's actually a good place to look because we have referenced Jose Canseco tweets so many times on this show. Granted, the more popular ones that we've ran with have been about Alex Rodriguez, so it probably doesn't make it as fun as it normally would be. Although it would be perfect if Jose Canseco said the best thing about the lockout was he didn't have to see Alex Rodriguez. That would be the most amazing thing ever.
Sadly, he didn't.
Oh.
No tweets.
No Canseco tweets about the lockout.
He's whipping and nay-naying in his car, though, for some reason. He just tweeted, "Watch me whip and nay-nay while in his car."
Because he's probably excited he doesn't have to watch any games with Alex Rodriguez. That's why.
Dude, you should work for his Twitter. That's a lot. Your idea is really good. He should be tweeting that.
I could totally throw shade at Alex Rodriguez all day long on Jose Canseco's Twitter. Jose Canseco, please, if you ever listen to the show, first of all, we're huge fans of your Twitter account. Second of all, hit me up. Josh Taylor HD. Shoot me a DM. I want to work for you. I want to run your Twitter account. I'll get videos of you whipping and nay-naying all day long.
Josh and I write hypothetical Family Guy scenes to each other on the daily. We are very creative people.
We have never done a hypothetical Family Guy scene with Jose Canseco, though.
No, but we will.
And it would be the best one we've ever written.
Correct.
It will also be wildly inappropriate. We could probably tell no one else about it ever. Like, not even our moms or our wives. And our moms would probably judge us if we told them.
So. Right. So no, we're not going to do that.
But you're on to something. I actually like this idea. We got to meet about this later on after this episode is over. All right, let's get into the actual topic of baseball that we wanted to talk about. The MLB lockout is official. It's a thing. I don't know a single person that hasn't looked at it without it being absolutely frustrating. Because I don't know what was more weird. The fact that it's happening the way it is for the reasons that it's happening, or the fact that we saw some of the strangest things go down transaction-wise right before this lockout became a thing. Like, some teams slid some moves under the gate, man. Pirates traded their catcher. They traded Jacob Stallings for a couple of kids from Florida, and they ended up signing Roberto Perez to bring him back. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
But what was the weirdest one? Max Scherzer going to the Mets? $43 million a season?
Let's go.
The first thing I thought about, I'm like, oh my God, where's Greg?
Greg was sleeping when it happened. So when he woke up, he gets text message from you and like, dude, they did it. I'm like, no way.
When you didn't respond immediately, it crossed my mind, he might be asleep. And I'm sitting there going, if he gets the text about the Mets signing Scherzer, I want it to be from me.
And it was.
I'm glad. I was honored to be the one that relayed that news to you.
I appreciate that because nobody else told me.
I'm surprised you didn't hear from Andrew Filippone.
I was too. I'm the one that texted him, but he was, you know, he was doing his show.
Fair enough.
It happened during the show.
Fair enough. Maybe that's why he didn't know, because otherwise he'd have probably been running around screaming.
What was funny was Mets Twitter was going insane the night of the reports coming out that they were close. I'm like, guys, nothing's going to happen like at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, go to bed. Like, they're all like, we can't go to bed. It's going to happen. Like, it's not going to happen at 2 a.m.
I imagine Mets Twitter ranged from between, it's going to happen, it's going to happen, and then there's no way this is happening. Yes. They're going to Mets it up.
Correct.
Basically.
Correct.
Which, in which case, I'm very proud of Mets Twitter for keeping it pretty consistent and in a way that everybody expected. I'm actually proud of them for that.
Josh, this is not our first rodeo in Mets Twitter. Trevor Bauer? Yeah. George Springer? Yeah. But yeah, the most Mets thing now that's going to happen is there won't be a season now that they have Max Scherzer.
That could be the most Mets thing ever. That could totally be a Mets thing. Oh, man, that would be absolutely crazy. Now, here's... I guess we should probably get into the details of this because... Now, granted, it's the first work stoppage since 1994, going into 1995, but it's the first lockout since 1990. Of the four major leagues, it's the first stoppage in any one of them since, I want to say, about 2012 or 2011. It's one of those two.
The NBA was the last one.
I want to say the NBA in 2012.
Yes.
Before that, there was a brief stoppage of the NHL was in 2011.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing we're talking about there. And the reason why I remember it being 2011, because I actually remember interviewing Ralph Sindrich, who... was James Ferrier's agent and a couple other agents in the NFL, by the way, was interviewing him at one of my old radio jobs about the NHL lockout and if it could open Pandora's box for a possible NBA lockout. And he really believed that it was possible. But now here we are with the MLB lockout, which I feel is nothing similar to what the NHL and NBA lockouts were.
No.
This one feels a lot more specifically targeted. This one feels a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? Petty? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more petty. And it also feels like both sides are just a completely different, you know, positions of this, and neither of them are closer to the middle.
This feels like nothing's going to get done for a long time.
I totally agree with that. I feel the exact same way.
Because there are so many teams, even the teams that can spend as much money as they want, that are not happy with the way baseball has been going. Especially with the rule changes. Like, you're limiting... how many batters a bullpen arm can face. Or you're telling a bullpen arm, you can't just be a lefty specialist anymore. You have to face three guys.
Right.
These guys don't like that. And it's not just that. The universal DH being up in the air, 1 year you have it, 1 year you don't have it. They're like, okay, let's make a decision on this, please.
And that does affect certain players and their ability to actually earn more money, because if you're going to earn more money as a DH because you're not as good of a fielder, you're going to get the hit most of the time.
Right.
That's going to affect your ability to make money.
There are guys out there like Nelson Cruz was the big name going around.
Right.
National League teams are looking at him. But they don't know if they can actually sign him or not until they make a decision on the DH.
And you're not going to until you know for certain you can have a DH, because you're not going to want Nelson Cruz out in the outfield.
Right. So the lockout now, nothing can be done until this lockout is over. So they're going to have a clear answer if there's a DH in the National League or not, and then they can make a decision.
Here's the crazy part. They had 3 days of bargaining this past week. Now, the union and the league, they each exchanged proposals. Anytime one side issued a proposal, the other one kind of just looked at it like, are you nuts? There was no way. Here's the thing that really sticks out for me. The final discussion day, like the final day of meetings, I want to say it was Thursday afternoon. They had a meeting around 3 o'clock. That meeting lasted 7 minutes.
What?
A 7 minute discussion. So before 3:30 in the afternoon, they met at 3. By 3:30, they're telling the players, yeah, expect a lockout. Like the people on the union side of the negotiations were telling players within a half hour, they already left, we're done negotiating for the day, expect a lockout. That's how far apart these two sides are.
That is bad.
That's telling.
7 minutes. They probably went through, okay, do we agree on this? No. Do we agree on this? No. How about that? Nope. And then, all right, we're done.
Here's the crazy part. That came... almost 9 hours, literally 9 hours before the deadline. The deadline was 11:59. They met at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Ridiculous.
They
had all day.
They need to have more hours to really figure this out if they were that far apart.
That far apart.
Not only were they done in 7 minutes, they're like, we're leaving and we're not coming back. We're done here.
That's
insane.
Not good.
That's not good.
Not good.
That says a lot as far as where these two sides are. The MLBPA put out a statement I should say this was Wednesday, was the final day of meetings. They had the meet, they had the final meeting Wednesday afternoon. The MLBPA put a statement out Thursday morning, and they called the lockout a drastic measure regardless of the timing. They also said it was the owner's choice, plain and simple, specifically calculated to pressure players into relinquishing rights and benefits and abandoning good faith bargaining proposals that will benefit not just players, but the game and industry as a whole. These tactics are not new. We have been here before, and players have risen to the occasion time and again. Guided by a solidarity that has been forged over generations, we will do so again here. We remain determined to return to the field under the terms of a negotiated collective bargaining agreement that is fair to all parties and provides fans with the best version of the game we all love. So the players are basically saying, look, we're trying to do this the best way we can, but they're not giving us anything. That's what it sounds like.
Do you think anything gets done without a salary cap coming? Do you think that they're pushing for a salary cap?
I think owners want one.
Even owners of the Yankees and Dodgers?
I think owners of the bigger teams like the Yankees and Dodgers, those teams are going to want a soft cap with a luxury tax, like the NBA.
Yes.
That's what they're going to want.
Right.
I think the smaller teams might want a hard cap. If I had to guess what might happen, I might guess the soft cap, because there's already a luxury tax threshold. So if you just make the luxury tax threshold the soft cap, then you got something there. However, if you're going to have a cap, you also got to have a floor. That becomes the problem that I think there might be for some owners. Some owners may not want a salary floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'll make it more complicated. Now, the thing that I'm waiting to see what happens, if it comes down to the thought of a floor or a cap or some of that idea, something of that nature, and some of the bigger market teams starting to get frustrated with the teams that aren't spending as much at the bottom half, Does that chasm make it even more interesting? Does that make it more complicated on the other side of things? Not that I'm saying it's going to happen, but if that were to become an issue, how much further apart does it make it as far as these two sides coming to a conclusion?
I think that they're just on so many different ideas. I mean, you said it yourself. A 7-minute meeting when you had all day still, that just shows how different and far apart these two sides are. And yeah, that concerns me a lot as a baseball fan, because that means that it's not just a salary cap problem. That means that there's a lot of problems that they're dealing with.
Yeah, and one of those things, now granted, the owner's side wanted to remove cost of living increases for the players' pension fund, which the players totally just missed out of hand. They're like, look, that's our pensions.
Right.
You got to adjust cost of living, which, of course, I mean, in any bargaining, that shouldn't be an afterthought.
No.
It shouldn't even be something to think about. But there's also the thing, and this is where teams are going to have a hard problem. They're going to have a really big problem with it. They're always going to have a hard time with this. The Players Association, the union wants players to reach free agency earlier and salary arbitration to come after a second season instead of a third season. So they want free agency after 5 years and arbitration after 2 years, as opposed to free agency after 6 years and arbitration after three, which it is now.
Mm. Okay.
That's going to be the sticking point.
Where do you stand on that?
If we're talking just a year, does it really?
It doesn't
make that much of a difference. Here's why I think it makes sense from the player's perspective. And it's probably something the owners don't want to admit, but they know it's true. You are seeing more players now that are starting to become starting players and get more innings as far as pitchers go, or more plate appearances as far as position players go. Since baseball is starting to skew so much younger, you're seeing players in that first, second year of arbitration eligibility stretching into that more reliable time where they have more time played, more service time, and I should say not more service time, but more opportunities to actually play, more plate appearances, more opportunities to rack up numbers, and in turn, more opportunities to make more money. So the arbitration process is going to stunt that by an extra year. But if you cut it to 2 years, now they're only got to deal with arbitration one other time after that first time around. Then you're talking about free agency years, and now you got to figure out when they're going to pay these guys. It makes it more difficult because the first 3 years, their salary is dictated by MLB. Like, you can't really do anything about it. But years 4, 5, and 6 in arbitration, that's when you're getting to the opportunities to make money. But the issue for MLB is when you're in that first, second year actually getting more opportunities to play, making money, years 4, 5, and 6, you're going to make more anyway. So technically, this could do the owners a favor.
Mm.
If you're talking about younger players that have more opportunities to play and excel and become everyday fixtures in year 2 or 3 when they're in their non-arbitration period, by the time you get to the arbitration period, maybe you're saving yourself a buck. And even, not to mention the fact that owners are trying to sign players to longer contracts anyway, either in their pre-arb or arbitration years, to try to avoid paying in the free agency anyway, or at least trying to pay off a year or two of free agency. This probably makes that situation a lot easier.
And we want it to be easier.
We want it to be easier.
Because it's not been through all these years.
But the problem is the owners want to make it easier for them. They don't want to make it easier for them and the players.
And the players don't like that.
And the players don't like that.
As they shouldn't.
And I think...
Everybody just wants to focus on themselves and not actually fix the entire problem.
And I think decreasing those two things by a year, I don't think that's unreasonable. I don't think decreasing arbitration after the second season is unreasonable. And I don't think decreasing free agency to 5 years is unreasonable. It's not like we're talking about going back to the reserve clause. Okay. We're not talking about that. And we're not talking about getting rid of arbitration and free agency completely. Because if there's a place I'm going to start, it's right where the players are. It's right where they are right now. Just decrease it by a year because the game is skewing so much younger anyway. It actually helps the owners because if you're going to sign a guy to a long-term deal that's going to eat up some arbitration and free agency years, you're going to get earlier production out of him because it's one less year of arbitration.
Right.
So you're going to eat into year 6 and 7, which he's going to be younger as opposed to year 7 and 8, where he'll be a year older. I don't think this is as terrible as it's being made out to be.
No, I don't either. That makes sense to me. I mean, we've seen before guys not getting called up because they're in the minors and they lose a year if they get called up early on their arbitration. That solves that problem too, right?
That's also true. It's and on top of that, the players are actually okay with the 12-team postseason as opposed to MLB. I think the owners want 14.
That's too many.
The players are saying, hey, we'll stretch it to 12. They're not going to argue with 12 because that gets the more teams in for them for opportunities to win. So they're not going to say no to that because they can chase a championship.
Everybody's expanding playoffs right now.
Right.
Except the leagues that don't need to. The NBA doesn't really need to.
No.
But they have that play-in game now.
They do.
So they've expanded a little bit. The NHL doesn't need to because half the league gets in.
Right.
The NFL has expanded because they're going to make more money.
Right.
The only league that hasn't done it is college football, and that's the one that everyone says needs to do
it. It needs to do it, and for all intents and purposes, I think you and I agree it's probably on deck soon.
It should be.
It should be.
It'll make more money and make more sense.
And MLB's doing it for the same reason why the college football playoff's going to do it, because it's going to make more money. Whether or not it makes more sense,
No, it probably doesn't.
But if you go to 12 teams, you're talking 6 on each side.
And you're playing 162 games. If you let half the league in, does it really matter what you do in 162 games?
Not really.
As long as you're better than the next two teams below you, you're in.
Not really. And that also becomes an incentive for some teams that may not be as inclined to go for it.
Right.
Because they're like, look, we may not win our division. We may not even get, you know, if there's 14 teams getting in, they're like, hey, look, we might not win our division. We might not even come in second place, but if we can get in as a third place team, it may not matter.
Right.
If we can snatch that 7th spot, who cares? And that's scary. That's a scary thought to imagine where teams can say, hey, we don't have to go as nuts as long as we can slide in the back door here. And that's a problem with me, too. I don't like the thought of 14 teams.
I don't either. So, hypothetically, you think there'll be a baseball season this year?
I think there will.
On time?
I think the regular season will start on time.
Okay.
Here's the part that I'm worried about. How much of spring training gets eaten into? That's the concern.
I mean, it's December right now, beginning of December. We don't need to worry about this right now.
Well, we say that.
But when we get to February and nothing's done yet, then we're going to have problems.
Spring training's in 2 months.
Right.
So, you know, you got about 60 days to figure that out. I get the feeling, just on the issues that the players and the owners specifically are at odds on, I feel like this is going to cut into spring training. Will it be like 2 months of it? No, but it might be a couple weeks.
Yeah.
It might be mid to late February. That's kind of where I'm looking at for maybe this gets done.
Here's the one thing that benefits baseball. It's that they lost so much money from COVID 2 years ago, the shortened season, that they can't afford to do that again. They have to get a and baseball is dying right now. The people that still like it, like you and me.
The interest in it is dying. Like, the game itself is not dying, but interest in
no,
it
No, the interest in it, though.
Yes.
People weren't watching the regular season. People weren't watching the playoffs. The only people that do are the diehards like us.
Right.
And they're starting to lose our interest whenever they do stuff like this. So they better get a deal going, and they better get a regular season going on time, and it better not make injuries happen because they didn't have a regular spring training.
And that's important, everything you brought up, because as far as MLB as the whole, the national TV deal goes, that maybe doesn't affect it. But as far as individual teams and their regional TV deals go, if you're a team whose deal's coming up soon and the regional network is going, well, these were your ratings the past couple years, and you could say, well, it was, you know, COVID-shortened season. Okay, that's fine, but people still aren't watching after the fact. And then you had a lockout in 2021, so people didn't watch in 2022. That's something that the local networks can use in negotiations down the road and maybe lowball an offer.
Right.
So it may not seem like it affects them now, but it could affect individual teams with their TV contracts down the road. And for the sake of argument, the Pirates' local contract already is pretty paltry compared to some of the teams out there. Dodgers got a long-term one for $1 billion total.
Yeah.
So we expect the Pirates to look that better as far as that local TV contract if they can't get people to watch now, much less down the road.
No.
It's not going to make it any easier.
Not at all.
So those are some of the long-term, you know, side effects, if you will. Some of the long-term, you know, circumstances or causes that might happen. That's what I'm worried about. Because even if you get a situation where both sides come out happy with what happens, that net effect from it taking too long might be something that cuts into it down the road. And we could be talking about 1994, 1995 all over again. Which, by the way, baseball lost a lot of fans because of that. I mean, we're talking, what, almost 30 years later. And there's some fans to this day that are still like, I don't mess with baseball after 1994.
And they brought fans back with the steroid era, as much as they don't want to admit it.
Oh, they
but
totally did.
People started watching baseball again when Bonds and McGuire and Sosa were all hitting bombs every day.
Pretty much.
And we don't have that anymore. And they don't even want to put them in the Hall of Fame. That's a story for another day, though.
Those guys helped bring the game back, and they don't want to reward them.
Right.
Ridiculous. Meanwhile, they wink, wink, nudge, nudge the entire time it was going on. And all of a sudden, oh, wait, those guys did this. And it's like, wait a minute, isn't that entrapment? This is kind of crazy.
Right.
But like you said, another conversation for another time. We need to switch gears from baseball to football. So here's what we'll do. We'll take a short little break. When we come back, we got to talk about Steelers and Ravens, plus we got hot sheet picks. We'll do that. Episode 33 of the Sunday Morning Grind. See you in a minute.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Grind podcast, a show where we talk about sports both on the Pittsburgh level locally, but also around the sporting world as well. We have a little fun with it, by the way, too. You can download the Sunday Morning Grind on iTunes, Google Podcast, Anchor, or Spotify, basically anywhere you get your podcasts from. Now let's get back to the show.
Roethlisberger with the time. That's intercepted! Here goes a terrific Hilton pick, and that is six. A pick six thrown by Ben Roethlisberger to his former teammate, Mike Hilton.
Welcome back. Episode 33 of the Sunday Morning Grind podcast. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley. We talked a lot of baseball in the first segment of this show. Now we got to get to football. We got hot sheet picks coming in a few minutes, but before we get to that, first of all, We got to talk about Steelers and Ravens because that's kicking off this afternoon, 4:25 at Heinz Field. Second of all, we got to talk about, at least that's what's happening within the last couple weeks, between the tie against the Lions, a loss against the Chargers, and then this is being the worst loss of the season last week, losing to the Bengals 41-10. I've resigned myself. I don't know how you feel about this. I have resigned myself to the fact that there are multiple problems with this.
Yes.
Multiple. To the point where I get frustrated when people keep trying to harp on the same problem as if it's the only isolated thing. It's not.
No.
We can talk about how bad the defense has looked in the past couple weeks, but let's talk about how they looked in the previous nine when they had everybody healthy. and they were holding teams to 8 to 20 points or less. And when they were doing that, when they were holding teams to 20 points or less, they were winning games.
Mm-hmm.
They were winning games in that pretty much, except for the tie against the Lions, of course. And then they gave up 24, I believe, 1 week and 27. And again, they gave up 27. Two games, they gave up 27. They won one and lost one. So there's that. But now we get into the point where the defense has issues as far as injuries. They're not healthy. The offense, when they are healthy, even when they are healthy, still can't score. This is a team that scored 15 points and won only because the defense allowed 10. If there's one thing that concerns me more, I don't know about you, the thing that concerns me more is that this offense played the Bengals twice and scored 10 points in each game. They played Cleveland once and scored 15 in that game. Three division games, they've averaged 11 points per game against the three division opponents. They still got three coming up, and two of them are against the Ravens.
Yeah, I don't love that. I don't. And another thing that worries me, they didn't score a lot of points against the Lions.
16 against the Lions.
Right.
It was weird because I heard, you gave up 16 points against a winless team? You only scored 16 points against a winless team.
Exactly.
Like, why?
Ray McLeod was your go-to guy that whole game.
Which is disturbing in and of itself.
That should never happen.
and we're also talking about a situation where you're scoring 16 points against a winless team. But people are harping on the defense are giving up 16. Do you realize the defense that gave up 16 points a game would be ranked number two in the league, only behind the Patriots?
Yeah.
That's how good of a defense that gives up 16 points a game would be. So I'm not blaming the defense for that. The offense that gives up 16 points a game, you're going to be in the bottom five.
Yeah.
Easily. And that's not considering the fact that the Steelers are already 23rd in the league in scoring and 25th in total offense.
Their best game scoring was against the Chargers. And that was also their worst game on defense. Okay. But that was because a bunch of dudes were out.
You know what? I looked at the wrong list. 23rd in points allowed and 25th in total defense. They're 22nd in yards and points both on offense. 22nd in scoring, 22nd in total offense. But it comes back to the same thing. Neither side looks good right now.
No. They can't run the ball because the offensive line can't do anything. So they don't want to run the ball. So then they're throwing the ball all the time, and defenses are figuring it out. I mean, how long does it take you to watch film and go, these guys aren't running the football? Plan for a pass.
They're fourth in passing attempts in the league.
Yeah, because they throw the ball all the time. Their 39-year-old quarterback going on 40 throws the ball every play.
He has 384 pass attempts. He's only completing 64.6% of his passes. I don't know how to better explain the fact that this was the thing that was not supposed to happen. This is the last thing that you needed to happen. The one thing that this team could not afford to happen was abandoning its run game. Because what's been happening the past several years, your quarterback throws a lot of passes. But he's 39 now on a surgically repaired elbow, 2 years removed from surgery.
Right.
It's one thing that already that he's 39. Now, 2 years removed from elbow surgery, he's already thrown the ball 435 times a game, and you still got six games left to play? That's a problem.
And they drafted...
I should say, he's thrown it 384 times, but you've thrown it 435 as a team.
And they drafted a running back in the first round to try and solve the problem.
They tried to solve that problem. They thought the two offensive linemen they drafted in the latter rounds would help solve the problem, but they have not solved the problem.
That didn't work.
But here's the issue. I'm not even blaming it just on the rookies that they drafted because the three other guys that were already there haven't done anything different either.
Exactly.
I should say the two that were already there and the one they brought in Trey Turner. How much of a difference have they made?
None.
Dotson, before he got hurt, was he really standing out? He wasn't to me. Chukwuma Okorafor was not standing out to me. Except if you want to count the game against Cleveland where he did a pretty good job of keeping Myles Garrett back. But that's the one performance we say, okay, Chukwuma got it done there. Outside of that, is anybody else in the offensive line really giving you that much confidence?
Not at all.
So I can't just blame it on the two rookies that they drafted because the veterans that they drafted aren't doing the damn thing either.
I agree with that.
And Kevin Dotson's only in the second year. So technically, you got on that line three guys that are second year younger. So how much do you really expect from that entire left side from the center over?
Not much. At least you shouldn't.
That's where I am with that.
I mean... What's frustrating to me is that multiple times this year, when the Steelers are inside the red zone, they still refuse to run the ball. And then when they actually do run the ball and they bring in Derek Watt, they score a touchdown because Najee Harris can jump over everybody and put the ball across the plane. But other times, they just refuse to do it. They're going shotgun from the 3-yard line. Run the football. Just do it.
Here's what's crazy. Here's what's absolutely insane. This team is 17th in the league in the red zone on offense. They've had 32 opportunities. They've scored 19 touchdowns. That's almost 60%. That's 17th in the league. So it's in the lower half of the league. However, this defense has had 37 attempts and only allowed 19 touchdowns. That's 51.4%. They're sixth in the league in red zone defense.
That's pretty good.
That's a big disparity. And you've scored as many touchdowns in the red zone as your defense has allowed. And your defense has had to play in the red zone more.
Yeah.
They've been more successful at keeping teams out than you've been in scoring.
That's the offense summed up pretty well. They have not. You and I have talked about this a lot this year. I don't trust them to put up enough points to win games that they could win in a shootout. When they played the Chargers, you and I both said, I don't trust this offense to score enough to keep up with Herbert in that offense. Now, granted, they did go punch for punch in the fourth quarter because they scored 24 points.
But when they needed to land a lockout blow in the fourth quarter, they didn't do it.
They still lost.
They had a chance.
And they kicked the field goal.
With what, less than 4 minutes left?
Uh-huh.
The defense, who did its job on like three straight series, by the way, forced a punt that turned into a block punt. Got an interception and then stopped LA.
On fourth down.
On fourth down on their own side of the field.
At like the 30-yard line.
Got your offense the ball inside the 40. And they got a grand total of three plays that got them all of like 4 yards in 19 seconds and they're putting the ball away. Kicking the field goal to go up by three. That was the game to me.
You knew that was game over after that.
We talk about going punch for punch. That was your chance to land a knockout blow. If you can get more than 4 or 5 yards in three plays in 19 seconds when you have 3 minutes left and you have the ball, that's the time you're supposed to take this game over and put it away. As good as that offense was in the late third quarter, early fourth quarter, you get to this part and this is where you go quiet?
Right.
Primarily because why? You couldn't run the football. At the same time, you didn't have a healthy Najee Harris. You got elbowed in the head. I get that part. But you didn't even have a second guy you can hand the ball off to at least get you 3 or 4 yards on first down?
Against the worst rushing defense in the NFL?
Against the worst rushing defense in the NFL. You couldn't do that? You couldn't run it once or twice to try to get 5 or 6 yards on two carries? Even if it's not with your starting guy and set you up for a third and short? You couldn't do that when the game is literally in your hands at that point?
Correct.
People keep talking about the defense falling short. I'm looking at this offense going, you had your chance here and you blew it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And now you got to go into a game against the Ravens where points might come at a premium.
The Ravens' defense has been insane. Quite frankly, the game they played last week against the Browns, they should have lost.
Agreed.
Lamar Jackson threw 4 interceptions. Baker Mayfield had the better game, and because of the defense of the Ravens, they still won that game.
How frustrating is this for Cleveland? Cleveland has now lost a 15-10 game to the Steelers and a 16-10 game to the Ravens.
Pretty frustrating, but it's the Browns, so I laugh.
Point taken. But like, as far as Baltimore's defense has gone, here's how much they have changed things up. Here's the number of total yards they gave up earlier this season. 491 against the Raiders, they lost. 405 against the Chiefs, they won. 285 against the Lions, they won. 254 against the Broncos, they won. 513, they beat the Colts in overtime, and that's a game I thought they should have lost.
Right.
Just like Detroit, I thought they should have lost that game too. You could argue that they probably should have lost. They definitely lost against the Raiders, and that was fitting. They gave up 208 yards against the Chargers and beat them. And that was a game that
they steamrolled
them. That was a game that they just absolutely just pummeled them. They gave up 520 against the Bengals and lost. 318 against the Vikings and won. 350 against the Dolphins and lost. 353 against the Bears and won, 262 against the Browns and won. But the dividing line for this defense, if they give up pretty much 400 yards or more, they're in trouble. I think they're what, 1-3? They're 1-3 if they give up more than 350. the one game they actually gave up more than 350 and won, that was the game against Indianapolis, where Indianapolis had that huge lead, and in that block kick got
called
back.
An illegal forward pass.
They called an illegal forward pass, which wasn't an illegal forward pass, by the way.
No, it was a clean lateral.
It was a clean lateral. So that ended up not being a touchdown, and that kind of opened the door for Baltimore, and they came back, chipped away, and won that game eventually in overtime. But my point is this. This is a defense that, when they're able to do certain things regularly, there's a reason why they're 3-1 in their last four games, because they've been able to start limiting teams from scoring. Now, the point totals they've given up in the last four games has gone down. 36-23, 23-22. They're starting to settle in now.
You're talking about the Ravens?
The Ravens' defense is starting to get comfortable.
Didn't the Browns only score 10 points?
The Browns only scored 10 points. 31 against Minnesota, 22 against Miami, 13 against Chicago, 10 against Cleveland.
Okay, you threw me. You went out of order. You threw me off.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That was actually, no, I was looking at the number of first downs. I wanted to actually present that second.
Okay.
And I read those in front of the points. But they're giving up fewer first downs. That was a 36, 23, 23, 22. But then the point totals have gone down. 31, 22, 13, 10. They are starting, not only are they going down, they're going down somewhat drastically.
And they held Hunt and Chubb to 36 yards combined.
Which is better than the Steelers did.
That's insane.
That's saying a lot.
That doesn't happen to those two guys.
No.
Which means that Najee Harris ain't going to do anything in this game.
You would think that in theory. Unless the Steelers put together some kind of game plan where they figure out how to get him space. And I don't know how they will. I really don't. This is one of those games that I don't expect either side to look good on either side of the ball again.
I believe the spread for this game is Baltimore 4.5, and I think that might be a little too high. I think it's going to be like a 3-point game.
You think it's that close?
The Ravens can't do anything on offense either.
It's fair. Their point totals the last three games, 10, 16, and 16.
They can't do anything on offense. Now, is this going to be the game they bust out? Maybe, but Lamar hasn't looked very good lately.
Their offense has scored in the teens 5 times this season. What do you think their record is when their offense scores in the teens?
They probably lost most of those games.
They're 3-2.
Really?
Beat the Lions 19-17. Lost to Cincinnati 41-17. Beat the Bears 16-13. Beat the Browns 16-10. Lost to the Dolphins 22-10.
Wow. I'm telling you, it's the defense. And the Steelers, being a team that can't really score much, going up against that defense, I'm very worried.
But who's another team that had won quite a few games while not scoring a lot of points?
Cleveland.
And the Steelers.
Yeah,
the Steelers had done the same thing. Remember, they scored 15 against Cleveland and won.
Right.
Their offense only scored 16 against Buffalo and won.
This is true.
So
it might be first team to score a touchdown.
It might be first team to score a touchdown in the team that turns the ball over the least.
Yeah.
Then again, Baltimore turned the ball over 4 times against Cleveland and still won. So you might be on to something here. First team to score a touchdown.
So what's your final prediction?
You said Baltimore 4.5 was the line?
Yeah.
I have no reason to suggest that the Steelers could cover 4.5 points. There's no evidence that shows me that it's possible. That's totally also considering the fact that T.J. Watt right now is on the COVID reserve list.
Yeah, T.J.'s not playing.
And he probably shouldn't be playing anyway, because I'm not convinced he's healthy. I'm not convinced he's 100%, but they need him too badly. I'm not convinced that Devin Bush is 100%, but they need him too badly. They also have no Tyson Alualu. They also have no Stephon Tuitt. And they didn't dress Isaiah Bugs in the last game. Cam Hayward had to play nose tackle. And Greg, how much do I joke about the Steelers needing to make the whole damn plane out of Cam?
All the time.
They tried to do that with the offensive line, and it didn't work. I didn't think they would try to do it literally. But they damn sure tried and failed.
Correct. I think rethinking this, I mean, all week I've been saying, no way the Steelers beat the Ravens. And I've been thinking, because the Ravens can't score, that the Steelers might cover, but they gave up 41 points to the Bengals. The Bengals lost to the Jets. This league is weird. It's hard to predict.
This league is super weird.
Which means that the Ravens have not been able to score as of late, means they're due. And this is probably going to be the game. So I think they will cover.
I'm thinking a double digit deficit or double digit margin here. That's where I am. Looking
ahead quickly, because we got to get the hot sheet soon. Looking ahead, how many games do you think the Steelers are going to win in these final six? I'm going to be shocked if they win 2.
I think that's exactly where I am is two.
I think they can beat Tennessee and they can beat the Browns.
I think they should beat Tennessee and they should beat the Browns.
So those are the two you agree with as well?
Yes, because I don't see them going to Minnesota.
Nope.
With 3 days in between after having to play Baltimore at home.
And the Vikings are playing the Lions this week?
Yep. I can't see them meet Minnesota. And by the way, Minnesota can score points. So good luck with that.
Thursday night football in Minnesota,
too. Thursday night football, you're a road team that normally does not do well. In Minnesota, in their last four games, 31 points, 27 points, 34 points, 26 points. And in their first six before the bye week, 24, 33, 30, 7, 19, 34. But they
yeah,
can
no.
score. So,
I like them to beat Tennessee just because everybody's out for the Titans. Now, if they get A.J. Brown and Julio back, okay, fine. But they don't have a running back right now.
That would literally be the only reason is because they got so many guys out.
Yep.
That would be the reason.
They're not going to Arrowhead and winning. The Chiefs look like they're getting right.
The Chiefs are figuring things out. And I think a lot of that is because their defensive front's getting healthy.
Yep.
They're starting to actually get some kind of rhythm on offense. They don't run the ball a ton. But they've got those guys healthy again. Their offensive line is starting to figure it out. Mahomes looks like he has his confidence back.
Yep. So I agree with that. They should beat Cleveland because the Browns are a pretty big dumpster fire right
Browns
now.
Browns are falling apart.
They are.
They're falling apart.
And then you finish the season in Baltimore. I have no faith that they're winning that game. Ravens could be playing for the division in that game, depending on what Cincinnati does in the next couple of weeks.
I think that's fair.
So, at best, Steelers are going to go 2-4, and they're not going to finish above 500 this year.
This might be the first one. And honestly, if there's a time when Mike Tomlin's first losing season is going to come, it's at a time when I feel like they need to make some critical changes.
I agree.
And you and I have been talking about this for a while now, that they've been making some slowly, like at a snail's pace. They phased out John Mitchell as the defensive line coach. They phased out Randy Feetner as the offensive coordinator. I believe Keith Butler on that last year of that contract, I think he's done after this year. They're going to phase him out. Terrell Austin's going to take this defense over, and Mike Tomlin's not going to have to call plays anymore. That's going to be Terrell Austin's job.
I'm looking forward to you saying, Greg, what did I tell you was going to happen?
And this is the fact that I'm just reading the tea leaves here. This is a coaching staff that was really, really, for all intents and purposes, really, really old.
Yeah.
And they're trying to phase this out and make this a much younger staff and make this a much younger team with a coach who, by the way, is only 49 years old. If there's a chance to reinvent yourself as an NFL head coach when you've already been coaching 14, 15 seasons, it's before you turn 50. You do it now.
Mm-hmm.
You do it while it's possible.
I'm with you. All right, so we both like the Ravens.
We both like the Ravens in this game.
All right, headed to Hot Sheet?
Let's do it.
All right. You hear the music? You know what that means. Time for Hot Sheet.
Time to get crazy.
Josh, we are tied.
How?
Because we killed it in week 11. Actually, you did. You went 9-6. I went 5-10. You killed it in week 11.
I was above room temperature.
You caught me. And before that, we were pretty dead even with just being awful.
We were both incredibly below room temperature.
This week, we both went 6-9. Thanksgiving saved you. The 4 o'clock slate saved me. You had the Rams, the Vikings. You had the Browns. Those all let you down. We both took Denver. I was surprised about that.
Yeah, I had a feeling about Denver.
Same. So, we're both 86-90. We both went 6-9 last week. Well, 86-90-1 because of the tie. Who did you take for Thursday? Did you take Dallas or New Orleans?
I took Dallas.
All right, so we both took Dallas -6.5. That takes us now to today's slate.
If Dallas didn't have both receivers back healthy and Taysom Hill starting at quarterback, I might have taken New Orleans. Might have.
The way the Saints looked on Thursday against the Bills, I think Dallas is going to light them up.
You see where I'm going?
Yep.
Okay.
This is a terrible slate. I'm just going to tell you now. I don't know if you've looked at this at all. It's horrible.
Considering most weeks have been terrible slates, I think last week was one of the few that actually was good in like the last 2 months. I'm actually not shocked.
I might not wake up for the 1 o'clock games. I might just keep sleeping.
Oh, I might. I'll be working through the 1 o'clock games. I got 10-1 coming up here.
Indianapolis at Houston. Texans +10. Colts, right?
Gotta be Colts.
Yeah. Arizona at Chicago. Bears +7.5.
I'm assuming Kyler Murray's going to be healthy to play in this one.
We've been assuming that for the last couple of games.
He hasn't.
I would like to think he's going to play.
Even with Colt McCoy starting, it's the Bears. And I don't know if they can slow Arizona down. I don't know if anybody can slow Arizona down. The only team that really could was the Packers.
You think Arizona East Coast at 1 o'clock has any type of problem?
They're playing in Chicago, so it's not East Coast. It's Central Time Zone.
Look at you.
So there's that.
All right.
I'll take the Cardinals in this one. Cardinals might be the best team in the league.
I'm taking the Cardinals.
They're 9-2, man. That's saying a lot.
And the one loss they had, other than the Packers, was against the Panthers, and that was because Colt McCoy was playing.
Yeah,
and he got hurt.
No Kyler and Colt McCoy got hurt. Yeah, I agree.
And no DeAndre. All right. Eagles at the Jets. Just another doozy.
Oh, Eagles.
Jets plus 7. Philly,
Eagles.
Minus 7.
Yeah, Jets can't stop a nosebleed. Jalen Hurts will give them a hard time. And, yeah. It's the Jets.
All right. I have had trouble figuring out what the Eagles are.
I think everybody has.
But I think that they'll win this game and cover.
Point taken.
Chargers at the Bengals. Probably the best game at 1 o'clock.
That is the best game and probably the only one worth watching. Cincinnati favored by 3 in this one.
Yep. Who's the letdown spot for? Because the Chargers just lost to the Broncos. So people are going to think they're bouncing back. The Bengals just blew out the Steelers. People are thinking the Bengals are back. Who's going to be the letdown? I think it's going to be the Chargers.
I think it's the Chargers, too. Because for the Bengals, as good as their offense is, their defense can actually play, too.
Yep.
Like, it's I think people have to stop trying to look past the Bengals.
I'm trying to figure out what the Chargers are. I mean, the last couple of weeks, I thought that the Chargers were going to win this division, and they've let Kansas City come all the way back. And now the Chiefs are playing for first place on Sunday night. That's where we're at now, because nobody has taken over in this division. We both like the Bengals.
We do. We both do.
Tampa Bay at Atlanta, Falcons plus 11.
Whew.
Pretty big spread. That being said, I'm taking Tampa Bay.
Tampa's healthy now, which is good.
No AB, though.
No AB. I'm wondering just how much they can do on offense, even though most of those guys are back. Atlanta could still do a little bit to keep things close. I'll go with the Falcons to cover the double digits.
Ooh.
They don't win. They don't win, but they cover at home. I see this more of a touchdown 8 points than I do 11.
All right. I think Tampa's going to rout them. That's just me.
Tampa should rout them. They should.
They should.
But look, this league is weird.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Here's just another doozy. The Giants at the Dolphins.
Oh, God.
Miami minus 4.
Miami minus 4 just out of spite alone.
Out of spite?
Dolphins minus 4 out of spite. Giants on the road? God.
Yeah, I'm taking the Dolphins. Dolphins have won 4 in a row.
Yeah, and Brian Flores, I think, is a good coach. They got to figure their quarterback situation out. There's a curse that's just hanging over Miami. It's really, really lovely.
Ever since Tannehill left.
It's magic, you make the argument. Just saying.
We always got to bring him up.
Got to bring up Fitzmagic. he was a guy that ended up doing a pretty good job in Miami, but it speaks to the problem. We already brought up Tannehill and Fitzpatrick in Miami. How many quarterbacks are they going to go through?
A lot.
They might go through another one.
Yep.
If they can figure it out, they'd be a really good team. But yeah, I'm taking the Dolphins.
I am too.
Because I trust the Giants less.
Minnesota at Detroit, Lions plus 7 on the count of 3. 1, 2, 3, Vikings.
Although Detroit will bite a lot of kneecaps.
Hey, to the Lions' credit, they covered on Thanksgiving.
They played a lot of games close. They played a lot of games close, and they pushed quite a few teams to the brink. I think they should get close.
The Vikings can score a lot of points, though.
I would make this assertion. If they don't get screwed in that game against the Ravens, they probably have 4 or 5 wins.
Wow.
I think that loss to the Ravens was pretty deflating. And that's
it was.
That's a game that they should have won, and they did the right things to win, and they got screwed.
I agree. But I don't think they're going to win a game.
Yeah, it looks like they're not.
They threw everything they could at the Rams, and they still couldn't win.
I agree.
Speaking of the Rams are hosting the Jaguars. The Rams are minus 13. Greg is taking the Jaguars plus 13.
So am I, because I don't trust the Rams to cover, because they have not covered against really bad teams all season.
Josh, they've looked bad.
They didn't cover. They're another team that didn't cover against the Lions was the Rams.
Yeah.
It took the Rams to the break.
They have looked bad for the last couple of weeks.
And they're too talented to look that bad.
They added OBJ, and they added 99 more problems.
Well, the thing is, OBJ hasn't been a problem. They still got issues outside of OBJ.
Right.
So,
but it seems like any team that guy plays for is going to have problems.
Then again, it's the NFL.
Correct. Staying in the 4 o'clock slate, Washington at Las Vegas. Raiders minus 2.5.
This seems like the Raiders are getting shortchanged. Like I'm running to the booth with Vegas for this one.
How many more times are we going to doubt the Washington football team, though?
My thing is, it's another situation. Like, what is this team going to do at quarterback? Are you sold your guy? Are you 100% certain that it's Heinicke? If it is indeed Taylor Heinicke, I'll probably feel different about Washington moving forward. But at the same time, Vegas at home, Vegas is another team that can score points.
Oh, I agree. I'm taking Vegas, too. But every time I pick against Washington, I eat crow for it.
Fair enough.
San Francisco at Seattle. Seahawks plus 3.5. I'm tired of taking this team and losing. I'm taking the 49ers.
I'm taking the 49ers as well. They're another team that's they're 6-5 now. San Francisco's figuring it out. And I don't think people are really giving them credit for it. They're also 4-1 on the road.
The game that they won that really opened my eyes was blowing out the Rams on Monday Night Football.
Blowing out the Rams on Monday Night Football. I agree. They did that at home. But this is a team that's 4-1 on the road. And they've won, if I'm not mistaken, 4 of their last 5. Beat Chicago, lost to the Cardinals, beat the Rams on Monday Night Football, beat Jacksonville, and beat Minnesota.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Sunday Night Football. I'm looking forward to this one, but I also think that Kansas City wins big. Denver at the Chiefs. Minus 9.5, Kansas City.
This is one of those games where everybody's like, is Kansas City back? Is Kansas City back? Is Kansas City back? And I'm saying, yes, they're back.
Yeah.
They'll come in and actually start this game a lot stronger, and they'll be able to finish it.
I think this is going to be like the Raiders game, where it's never close.
Wow.
You don't?
I'm not ready to see them. I'm not ready to think that they're going to be ready to blow somebody up yet. If they continue to do this throughout the rest of the season and the defense keeps allowing fewer points, you know, maybe on a decreasing fashion, I might feel a little bit stronger about it. I'm just not there yet.
You taking the Chiefs, though?
I'm taking the Chiefs.
Okay. Finally, Monday Night Football, best game of the week, Patriots-Bills. Buffalo minus 2.5.
New England.
I'm taking the Patriots.
New England's got the best scoring defense in the league. They haven't allowed points in, 18 quarters or some ridiculous number like that now?
When a good defense plays Josh Allen looks very bad.
And that there's a team that can make it harder for him.
It's these guys.
to do what he needs to do. It's them. They can blitz and make his life miserable. They can drop back in coverage and make his life miserable. All that stuff just totals up for me.
I'm an idiot. I forgot to put the Ravens and Steelers on here. Whoops. We're both taking Baltimore. Right? 4.5?
Yeah, we're both taking Baltimore.
All right. Baltimore minus 4.5.
Okay. That stat I had about the Patriots, I was reading the wrong thing. But for all intents and purposes, I read that the wrong way. But the Patriots have won 6 in a row. And they've done it by allowing these point totals. 13-24 against the Chargers. They scored 27. 6-7-0-13.
Wow.
So, not allowing a point in 18 quarters, I think that was off. I think there was something else in 18 quarters. I think I wrote down the wrong thing and got screwed up. But, however, they've allowed fewer than 13 points in the last 4 games.
They're back.
They're doing okay.
It took them 1 year, and they're back.
Well, here's what happened. Their entire defense came back after most of them opting out last year.
Right.
They used money to actually shore up the guys on offense. They brought in 2 tight ends, both of which they needed. Hunter Henry, Woo Pig, is doing his thing. And Mac Jones just has to not screw it up. But he's also made some plays here and there where he actually looks better than he probably should.
I agree.
But they're treating Mac Jones the same way they treated Brady when he first got there. They don't need him to win the game. They just need him to not lose it.
Right.
And he's doing fine with it.
He is.
Because they got an efficient enough offense and good enough defense.
All right. That'll do it for episode 33, Josh.
That's it for us. Don't forget to follow the show on Twitter, Sunday, MORN Grind. Follow Greg at the GFin. Follow me at Josh Taylor HD.
We back next week. Can you do it for next week?
We'll be back next week.
We got to do a Thursday edition for Steelers Vikings.
We do indeed. So Thursday edition for Steelers Vikings. That's coming up next week, episode 34. For Greg Finley, I'm Josh Taylor. See you next week.